U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin spoke to reporters in Israel.
Hamas should never again be able to project terror from Gaza into the sovereign state of Israel.
Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu faces increased criticism after three Israeli hostages were killed by the Israel Defense Forces.
The father of one of them at his funeral said that he blames the government.
A mother's heart-wrenching story after her daughter was kidnapped by Hamas.
She's my daughter, and it's terrible. Yeah, it's just terrible. We just want her back. We just miss her so much.
And a look at training received by civilians entering hostile environments. Today is Monday, December 18th, and this is VOA's Flashpoint Global Crises. Good evening. I'm Steve Miller. U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin traveled to Israel as part of an expected multi-nation trip to discuss protecting civilians and Israel's planning for the next phase of its war against Hamas. Speaking to reporters on Monday, Austin reiterated that the United States stands with Israel as it fights to, quote, dismantle the Hamas terrorist infrastructure, end quote.
So make no mistake. Hamas should never again be able to project terror from Gaza into the sovereign state of Israel. And we will continue to work together for a safer, more secure future for Israel and a brighter future for the Palestinians.
And on Sunday, Rear Admiral Daniel Hagari, who was a spokesperson for the Israeli military, gave a stark warning to Lebanon's Hezbollah, advising that if continued attacks came from the area, the IDF will respond forcefully.
Since Hezbollah began its attacks, the IDF has been responding by striking Hezbollah targets in Lebanon. Hezbollah, a proxy of Iran, is dragging Lebanon into an unnecessary war that would have devastating consequences for the people of Lebanon. This is a war that they do not deserve.
For more, I'm joined by Linda Gradstein in Jerusalem.
It's Secretary Austin's second trip since October 7th. He talked about the need to sort of, perhaps change Israel's strategy. And that was certainly done, at least according to the Israeli press, privately, in which Israel, the United States wants Israel to switch from its kind of fighting in Gaza with tens of thousands of soldiers to taking many of those soldiers out and pinpoint operations against Hamas, which would, of course, lessen the civilian death toll. Gallant said, interestingly, that Israel does not want to control Gaza long term, and that Israel wants to begin allowing civilians to come back to places in Gaza, to come back to their homes. But he did not give a timeline for that.
Linda, Austin also met with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. And over the weekend, there were some protests in Israel about the killing of three Israeli hostages by the IDF and mistaken for combatants. What is the mood domestically in Israel in the wake of this?
Well, most Israelis continue to support the war against Hamas and believe that after what happened on October 7th, Hamas can never be a partner. And in fact, some people say that getting rid of Hamas in Gaza, at least as a military power, might open the way for new types of negotiations with the Palestinians or new types of agreement. That said, this killing of the three hostages, who were waving a white flag and who were, stripped from the waist up, showing that they weren't wearing a bomb, has really kind of shocked people. The father of one of them at his funeral said that he blames the government. I think, Israel's a very small country and everybody knows somebody who is either killed or is taken hostage. And I think that it really kind of shocked people. And some of the frustration with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is coming out. He's sunk in the polls even before this happened. And most Israelis say that he should not continue to be prime minister. That's said, they say that that's going to have to wait until after the war, not right now.
And speaking of the war, Linda, there is continued concern that it could expand beyond the boundaries of Israel and the Gaza Strip.
At both Lebanon and the Red Sea. I mean, Hezbollah has been firing on Israel just about every day since this started, but has sort of not launched a full all-out war against Israel. Hezbollah has, you know, 150,000 rockets that can cover all parts of Israel. And so a war with Hezbollah, especially while the war with Gaza is still going on, would be a huge deal, both for Israel and for the international community. Now, Gallant said that Israel prefers to do it with diplomacy. What I'm hearing is that basically they want to carve out an area of South Lebanon that Hezbollah will not be present in, which is what's supposed to happen anyway, according to UN resolutions, and that Israel wants to just sort of push Hezbollah back. But unlike Hamas, where Israel's been very explicit about completely destroying the military power of Hamas, hunting down the Hamas leaders, Gallant said it again today, they're not saying that about Hezbollah. And they're saying that they prefer to do it with diplomacy, but that Israel is prepared to act if it needs to. In terms of the Houthis in the Red Sea, Austin said several times that the United States will make sure that those shipping lanes are not attacked, and he warned Iran that it was making a mistake by supporting the Houthis.
Linda Gradstein reports for VOA from Jerusalem and Israel. Linda, as always, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. My pleasure.
In New York, the United Nations Security Council could vote on Monday on a resolution calling for a humanitarian ceasefire in the Gaza Strip. The draft Security Council resolution, which has been seen by multiple news agencies, calls for an urgent and sustainable cessation of hostilities to allow safe and unhindered humanitarian access. With all the horrific video footage from the October 7th attack on Israel, one of the more jarring shows a young Israeli woman, hands bound behind her back, her pants bloodied as she's being dragged by her hair out of the back of a jeep by her Hamas captors. She is 19-year-old Na'ama Levy. Her mother, Ayet Levy Shachar, has not seen or heard from her since. VOA's Lori London spoke with Shachar about the ordeal and why she's speaking out.
I appreciate your taking the time. I know this is not, you would rather be sitting at home with your daughter than talking to them.
Yeah. It has been a nightmare. But it is important for me to, you know, to speak and to tell the story and to tell about Na'ama and all the other, you know, there are still 17 young women, teens, some of them, kept in Gaza, kidnapped and held hostage there. So this nightmare continues. And I want to speak up about that.
I've heard you say that it's important for the world to see that video of your daughter. Why is that?
You know, the details of the video, the brutal, images of her being dragged and wounded and, handcuffed and with her pajamas and her blood stained pants, you know, for me, it's not the most terrible thing a mother can see, of course, but this has happened. This is what is going on. And it is important for the world to see, because we need the world. We need the world here, the power of the world, the power of mothers, you know, mothers like me, that to just put the pressure on and to get these people, these women back, you know, now.
Yeah.
We don't have any time to spare here.
We're not really hearing anything in the news much about the hostages from officials, from the Red Cross, about the people like Na'ama who are still being held. And have you received any information or any updates? Or
no communication and no information officially from any of the, you know, the Red Cross or other organization, humanitarian organizations that you think that their assignment is to bring information about their well-being from captivity and to forward, you know, medical aid or basic healthcare needs, medications. We have nothing from that. We did get a sign of life from Na'ama, from the hostages that had returned, the mothers and the children. It's almost 2 weeks, I think, since then. So we do know that she's there and she's alive and she's walking. But we don't have further information and no official contact with her. If they cannot do what they're assigned to do, then I would expect them to sound that off and you know, again, for the world to hear.
Why is it that we're hearing about bombing and we're hearing about the war, but we're not hearing much about those people that are still being held?
Oh, that is a very good question. And, you know, I've been asked this and I don't know the answer. I'm just, you know, I'm asking the same questions. Why is it that we don't hear about, you know, there have been crimes against humanity since October 7th, on October 7th and since, because there were 240 hostages and there are still 100 and almost 140 kidnapped people, innocent people that are kept there since the terror attack. And we're not hearing that so much. And, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, because maybe I'm not aware of all the worldwide media that's going on. But I don't see that out there. And definitely not as much as you see about the bombings and attacks in Gaza. So that's a good question. My answer is that it is a good question. Why not?
What can you tell us about who she is? What should people know about her?
Well, I think everyone's seeing her photo, her beautiful smile, and she's just a gentle, soft-spoken girl. Gentle, but yet very determined, and in her quiet way. She finished high school, she majored in diplomacy, and she was always looking for how to, you know, talk about more like a bridge between communities, and she was a member of Hands of Peace, a youth organization which promotes talks of peace and communication between Israelis, Palestinians, and Americans. She was part of a delegation from that, and that's what she is. That's who she is. A year after high school, just until recently, she was in a year of volunteer and community work where she volunteered in a kindergarten for African refugees, always looking for how to do good in the world. And you know, she does know how to speak up for herself. She has like a very clear voice, I think more than me. You know, that's what she is. And she loves just to hang out with her friends and then and with her brothers and sister and just my little girl. She's my little girl. She's my daughter. And it's terrible. Yeah, it's just terrible. We just want her back. We just miss her so much.
And you haven't heard of any efforts to try to work on getting the hostages out?
Well, negotiations have stopped.
Yeah.
According to what we understand from our talks with government officials and from the media. And what we do understand that they're attempting to start negotiations again, but we don't know where it stands right now because the attacks or the bombings are going on. So, you know, I don't know any better than you, I guess, on that part.
And of course, we've heard these horror stories of Hamas sexual violence against women coming to light. Given the video you saw, as a mother, as a physician, what is the message the world needs to hear about this?
You know, how difficult it is, as it is for me to speak about it, our concern, what scares us, what scares me, is that exact thing, the sexual assaults that we do know by testimonials that were there on the 7th of October and testimonials of hostages returning. And from that video that you can clearly see her bloodstained hands, and we don't know, you know, we don't want to think about the worst, but we can't avoid that. So that all the risks that have to do with that, with the sexual assault and, you know, even pregnancy and women and in this conditions that they are the most vulnerable to these conditions of being kept hostage, and not only sexual violence, but anything else, you know, they're more vulnerable physically and emotionally. So we know that, you know, by research, not just because I'm a mother and saying this. And, you know, their basic needs, women's basic needs, it's concerning in so many ways. We just need to get them out. You know, that's why I'm speaking.
Ailet Levy Shachar is the mother of Hamas hostage Naama Levy. She spoke with my colleague, Lori London. And still to come, a look at what it takes to prepare journalists and others entering high-risk environments.
That was amazing. And this is probably the most useful exercise all of us could do.
This is VOA News. You're listening to Flashpoint Global Crises from the Voice of America. I'm Steve Miller. Palestinian prisoners' rights organizations are calling for Red Cross access to almost 4,000 Palestinians arrested since the Israel-Hamas war began on October 7th, amid claims that Israel is holding prisoners in inhumane conditions without charge. From Ramallah on the West Bank, Henry Wilkins speaks to recently released prisoners and the family of a child held in captivity.
In the West Bank city of Ramallah, members of the Palestinian Prisoners Club demonstrated December 12th outside the offices of the International Committee of the Red Cross. Amin Shamali of the Palestinian Commission for Detainees Affairs says that the aim is to urge the ICRC to visit detainees in Israeli prisons and detention centres, and that it's crucial to highlight that Israel has banned the ICRC and lawyers from visiting prisoners. He says they have no way of obtaining information about or communicating with those arrested since October 7th. Almost 4,000 Palestinians have been arrested since the Israel-Hamas war began, according to Palestinian prisoners' rights groups. After October 7th, Israel suspended the ICRC's regular visits to Palestinian prisoners to ensure humane treatment in detention. According to Amnesty International, torture of Palestinian prisoners has been ongoing for decades in Israeli prisons. It and other human rights organizations have also complained that Israel has been holding Palestinians without charge or due process under what Israel calls administrative detention. Administrative detention has to be approved by a judge. It allows authorities to detain people based on security concerns alone. VOA spoke to a former Israeli judge on whether administrative detention represents a threat to democracy. He says the move protects democracy.
Of course, it limits the rights of the person. A democracy shouldn't commit suicide in order to prove its vitality.
Here in the Kalandia refugee camp, the site of many recent arrests, Khaled Shadeh says his 17-year-old niece was shot and held after approaching an Israeli checkpoint waving a Palestinian flag. This video purports to show her being detained. Her family has not heard from her in more than a month. He says family members anticipated she'd be included in the November prisoner release, but they were shocked when she was not, despite her youth, innocence, and the fact that she had committed no wrong. He says they now just live in the hope she'll be released soon. The Israeli government has declared dead in absentia 19 of the 135 hostages still held by Hamas inside Gaza. Israel has similarly called for Hamas to grant the ICRC access to the hostages, but the ICRC says it cannot do so safely. Hanan Barghouti was released in November under a deal that saw the release of Israeli hostages in Gaza in exchange for Palestinian prisoners. She says she suffered inhumane treatment in an Israeli jail where she was held under administrative detention and sympathizes with the hostages being held in Gaza. She says we are human and we strongly oppose imprisonment or killing others. She says that she has no desire to harm anyone, not even the person who imprisoned her. And that if circumstances change and Palestine is restored and she becomes the jailer, she wouldn't harm people. On whether visits to Palestinian prisoners would resume, the ICRC told VOA in a written response that the ICRC is engaging the relevant authorities on this critical matter in its usual bilateral and confidential dialogue. Henry Wilkins, VOA News, Ramallah, the West Bank.
In Europe, Ukraine's military said on Monday that it shot down all 5 drones Russia had used in an attempted attacks overnight. The Ukrainian Air Force said that the drones were downed in 4 different parts of the country, including Mykolaiv, Dnipropetrovsk, Vinnytsia, and Khmelnytsky regions. There were no reports of casualties or damage on the ground from falling debris. VOA's Scott Walterman has more from the region.
The Freedom of Russia Legion, a Ukrainian-based paramilitary group of Russians who oppose President Vladimir Putin, claimed responsibility on Sunday for a cross-border attack a few kilometers into Russia's Belgorod region. The group, designated as a terrorist organization in Russia, said it had destroyed a platoon stronghold of Russian troops near the Terebreno village without specifying whether it had destroyed infrastructure or killed soldiers. It also said mines were left behind. VOA could not verify the report. And Ukraine's RBC media reports Ukraine's army chief, Valery Zaluzhny, said on Monday that the situation on the front line had not reached a stalemate. he declined to comment on whether Ukraine would continue counteroffensive operations during the winter due to the sensitivity of the matter. Scott Walterman, VOA News.
And finally, the wars in Ukraine, Gaza, and other dangerous places around the world have heightened the need to prepare journalists, staff working with non-governmental organizations, healthcare professionals, as well as civilians to be ready for life and death situations in high-risk environments. Global Journalist Security is a company that does just that. Phil Bolexio brings us this story to round us out.
What to do when near an active shooter? Maybe you're getting robbed.
Do what you're told.
Or you're harassed at a military checkpoint. Kidnapped? Just a few of the many scenarios journalists, workers from non-governmental organizations or NGOs, and civilians might face when entering a high-risk area.
Everything!
Through classroom and hands-on training, they can be better prepared to manage and increase their survival rate.
My name is Frank Smythe. I'm the founder and CEO of Global Journalist Security, GJS. I was working for the Committee to Protect Journalists in the 2000s. And during the Iraq War, the U.S. invasion of Iraq in 2003, a number of journalists were killed by firing, including by U.S. forces. And there was an organization that was founded in London called the International News Safety Institute. I worked with the Committee to Protect Journalists to have me serve on the board of that London group representing CPJ to make sure we had a voice. And that allowed me to get a front row seat on the program of providing training to journalists. But by the end of the decade, I decided it was time to start my own organization to provide a different kind of training, incorporating emotional self-care into the training and stress management in a way that hadn't been done before, incorporating digital safety, because some browsers are safer than others, so we're going to see that. Because by the 2010s, it was clear that digital safety was becoming a major aspect of security, which has only increased, and addressing things like sexual assault.
According to UNESCO, 3 out of 4 local journalists around the world were killed outside their office or newsrooms in the year 2020 to 2021.
So I thought we needed smarter training and more appropriate training that would address that reality.
Then you got the detonator here. I'm Paul Burton, the training director for GGS. We only have 3 days to teach things. Okay, we've got a mortar round on the right. So we've got to whittle it down and only teach what they really need and what they can remember.
GJS offers hostile environment and first aid training through an array of programs, including 1 to 5 day courses, along with online classes. Karen Hardy with Hardy Associates travels around the world.
That was amazing. And this is probably the most useful exercise all of us could do, because the chances of the car accident on the road in those countries is...
You do not go out there and get shot. So the first sound is the bullet just missing you.
Andre Sabalunika works with the Marshall Legacy Institute, which helps countries recover from conflict by accelerating landmine clearance operations.
Course definitely helped to prepare me for some unexpected maybe situation that would happen. And I think just increasing the situational awareness.
I think what we're trying to do is teach people similar habits and protocols that will help them stay safe and maintain an awareness in what is increasingly a difficult and more dangerous environments, both at home and abroad.
Philip Alexio, VOA News, Washington.
And that concludes today's program. There's, of course, more news 24 hours a day on our website, voanews.com, as well as on our social media platforms. On behalf of everyone at VOA, we thank you for listening. Until tomorrow, I'm Steve Miller. Stay up to date with VOA podcasts. Each weekday, International Edition covers the world's biggest stories, while Flashpoint Iran and Flashpoint Ukraine examine their respective regions in depth
every week.